Welcome to David Clark's We Are Superman podcast, number 108 and number 3 of the reboot. I'm your host, Bill Stahl, and we have a really great guest today I'm excited to bring on. His name is Ed Barnett. He's coming to us from his home in Panama City Beach, Florida, and Ed is a mainstay of our We Are Superman Leadville 10 Warriors group. Former big guy who's lost a lot of weight, dropped the drinking, gone plant-based, and is doing some really great things in his life. He's been really excited to let everybody know about the changes he's made and all the positivity that it's brought into his life, as well as the lives of those around him. So Ed accompanied David on his Hockey Fights Cancer bike ride last January, where David rode a fat tire bike 1,000 miles from Chicago through Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, New Jersey to New York. I think I forgot Detroit in there. So they went from Chicago to Detroit to Pittsburgh, and all to support Hockey Fights Cancer, I should say. He and Otis Price were David's crew along that whole way, and Ed will talk about that. He'll talk about how he met David and David's influence on his life and how Ed has made such an impact on changing the way Ed lives his life today, and I think you'll enjoy this conversation a whole lot. Just a quick reminder, if you are interested in the Leadville 10 Warriors group, we are a worldwide group of runners. A lot of people have been overcoming obesity, problems like addictions, alcoholism, to become great athletes, to achieve audacious goals like running ultra marathons. If you want to join the group, you will receive training from me in running. You'll receive training from David's girlfriend, Courtney, in Pilates, yoga, meditation. We have a really great every other week Zoom call where we talk to each other, support each other. It's really very positive. We have a very active, very positive Facebook page community that you can be part of. So if you are interested, drop me a line about that. And also, let me remind you that I'm still compiling articles, stories, whatever you would like to provide for what I'm calling David's fourth book. And a lot of people have told me how much David influenced their life, changed their life, saved their life. And so I would love to have those stories to share with everybody so everybody else can benefit from David's wisdom that he gave to them. So if you're willing to write that down, please send it to me, or if you would prefer, I can do a phone interview and I can go ahead and transcribe that, whatever you're more comfortable with. My email address and Instagram handle I will list in the show notes. Email is silly_billy, that's SILLY_BILLY at MSN.com. And my Instagram is at Stahlor, STAHLOR. So please send those along. I'm wanting to work on that this winter, put that all together into book form for everybody. Really excited about that. So let's get on to the interview conversation with Ed Barnett of Panama City Beach, Florida, and the We Are Superman Leadville 10 Warriors group. Thanks again for tuning in, and enjoy. Welcome to the We Are Superman podcast, episode number 108. This is the third episode of the rebooted We Are Superman podcast, and I'm really excited that we've got a great guest here today. This is Ed Barnett, who lives in Panama City Beach, Florida, and he's one of our members of the We Are Superman Leadville 10 Warriors group. And so really excited to have Ed on here today, a good friend of David Clark's, and we are going to talk about all sorts of subjects. David has been a good friend of his, and Ed has transformed himself a lot with David's help. And so really honored to have Ed on the podcast today. So Ed, welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for being on today. How are you doing?
Hey, Bill. I am doing great, and I am extremely honored to be on here. It's actually been one of the dreams of my journey, and I always hinted to Dave, like, hey, you know, I'd be a great interview if you ever wanted to have me on. And we just never got around to it.
Are you sure that was the reason?
Yeah, no. So I'm extremely honored to be on here. with you.
Well, fantastic. Well, thanks so much for being here. Weather, it looks great out there in Panama City Beach. It's kind of snowy here in Colorado, and you've got your stupid Frosty the Snowman out on your balcony overlooking the ocean. That's just not fair.
Well, we have snow and spirit here. But our snow is a white sandy beach with blue water.
All right. Well, as long as you're not like spray painting that fake snow, you know, drifting snow in the windows. I've seen that in California. Oh, yeah. It just looks ridiculous.
Right. Yeah, no, it was great to run. I had a nice little 10K today and just relaxing now. So.
All right. Nice. Well, you know, one of the things that impresses me is, you just had surgery a few months ago, hernia surgery. You've had vascular surgery in both legs, right?
Yes.
Yep. Just recently. And yet you went out there and ran how far today? 10K, did you say, or how far?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
Ended up doing 6.23 miles today, nonstop. That was part of my training plan that you had me on.
Good, good.
And I was like, ah, can I let you down? He says a continuous run. So somehow, regardless of pace, I got to keep my feet moving one in front of the other. And I did.
Nice. You are very good at keeping one foot in front of the other. I know that.
It's actually the longest continuous run I've had since spring, I think.
Wow.
Felt really great.
Well, that's good. Well, making good progress. So that's very impressive.
Yeah, 3 weeks now since I restarted. Just to touch on what you had said, I had last worked out the first part of September, around September 14th or 15th. And I had a pretty major stomach hernia surgery. I had an umbilical hernia with three large tears, and it was pretty bad. And so I got that squared away on September 18th and took care of it like I was supposed to, didn't rush recovery. And then on October 14th, I had vascular surgery on my right leg, and October 28th on my left leg. And so I recovered as properly as I was supposed to with those. And then I was finally released 3.5 weeks ago to start working out. And I've just, embraced it, every day doing something and, just making myself better one day at a time again until I've got a meniscus surgery on my left knee December 23rd. So I'm taking advantage of every minute of every day to get healed up again and be in the best shape I can be for my meniscus surgery.
Makes a lot of sense. How long are you going to be down for the count after the meniscus surgery?
I honestly don't know. With my stomach hernia, I was told that I was going to be down for anywhere for 4 to 6 months, really. And, obviously I have came back from that in 2 months or a little bit less even. So I think certainly, my health going into these has helped me a ton. We went plant-based just over a year ago, thanks to a text message from David, actually sitting in the same chair. I was telling him how sore I was. And he said, "Ed, just try going plant-based for 2 weeks. That's all I ask of you. And just let me know how you feel." And so that 2 weeks so far has turned into 13 months.
Wow. What made David so convincing to make you change to plant-based?
That is a great question. I guess is just, as anybody that knows him, he just has that or had that belief and vision to make you feel like that you could do anything in the world. And, when he started training me, I told him from day one, I said, "David, I will do anything that you tell me to do. I prefer you tell me not to go jump off of a cliff, but if you do, I will not ask questions. I will do it." And so I did. Like I say, I never missed a single workout that he sent me. And, he just made me believe in myself. And so when he asked me to try that, and knowing his journey, and I had, been paying attention anyway. I always pay attention. I never really act on anything immediately. I always kind of look at the seeds that have been planted from the people around me and just observe. And so when he asked me to do that, I just was ready. And my wife completely bought into it with me. We were supposed to have some eggs and turkey sausage the next morning. And all of a sudden she comes in with some oatmeal and a bowl of fruit. And I'm like, what the heck is this? Right. I'm ready for my, you know, a big pile of eggs and turkey sausage. Right. And she says, so are we going to do it or not? And I'm like, for real? You seriously want to? And so it was a matter of me buying into David and my wife buying in as well, you know, because she is literally the reason that I'm able to do most of this. I mean, she cooks everything for me and makes sure it's healthy and researches every ingredient and product.
Yep. Darn good thing. You'd be helpless otherwise, right?
I'm afraid so, yes. Right.
Well, let's back up the bus just a little bit here. So you definitely, your personality is such that when you decide you are going to make a change, you do it, you just flip a switch, don't you? It's kind of like the switch that David talked about in races, but you flip a switch. You went right from eating whatever you wanted, and I know chicken wings was a personal favorite, and you went huge. From, that was it, cold turkey, so to speak, on chicken wings. You went right from turkey sausage and eggs to oatmeal, right? What about your personality causes you to be able to just flip that switch?
You know, it's a lot of OCD and a lot of, it's just an addictive nature. Going back, I guess it got to the point, for a number of years, it's like, just like anybody else, go out and, Sunday fun day, is a common term. You go out and drink a few pitchers of beer and have a few buckets of wings. And pretty soon those pitchers of beer on a Sunday turned into Monday and more frequently than they should have.
Right.
And so it kind of dawned on me there at the end of 2017 that, this is becoming more frequent than it should be. And I was a smoker as well. I smoked cigarettes about a pack and a half a day, up to two packs occasionally. And so I decided no more. January 3rd of 2018, I put alcohol and cigarettes down, said enough was enough. I'm going to take my life back. Now at that point, and same with soda pop. I was addicted to Diet Coke. Holy moly, I drink a 12-pack of Diet Coke a day.
I've seen people like that. Unreal. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
But you did it all on one day.
I did.
January 3rd. Yeah.
Yeah. That just goes along with it. It's like, for better or for worse, I can't taper off. I am either all in or all out. And that January 3rd of 18, I just said enough's enough. At that point, I was about 345 pounds. I hadn't worked out in 10 years, roughly. And even at that point, it was just some push-ups and sit-ups, enough to stay active. But I hadn't ran literally since my college baseball days and, since the early 90s. So that day, I decided, I'm going to go for a walk. And I did. Came back, and we have a fitness room in the condo where we live. And so I went in the fitness room, and we had a bench press, and I lifted the 45-pound bar, and that was my workout. It was lifting a 45-pound bar. I had lost so much strength.
Wow.
And, crazy enough. And so unfortunately, throughout that year, I just started gaining weight. The food had taken the place of those pitchers of beer. And the chicken wings went from being a 12 piece to a 32 piece, it became an onslaught. A few pieces of pizza went to being an extra large. And so, it just got to the point to where I ballooned up to over 400 pounds. And, throughout the years, I understand what I'm doing. This is not the healthiest thing to substitute poor food for this. But I know in my mind, beginning in 2019, I'm going to flip that switch. So in a way, I looked at it that, I am going to use this year to kill those demons. I'm going to kill alcohol and cigarettes. I'm going to put them away, and that's it. And so I just made the deal with myself that I will allow myself to use food for this year only. And that was my deal. And so beginning in January of 2019, I knew that I was going to change. I had walked throughout 2018. I'd got a lot of strength back. I'd started lifting weights, but I knew that I was going to get my food in order and somehow completely change my physical health. I wasn't sure how, but it was going to happen.
Right.
And then on Super Bowl Sunday, February 3rd, my wife and I were at a restaurant, and lo and behold, I'm eating chicken wings, of course.
I was going to say National Wing Day right there.
I kid you not. And my brother calls me. And quite honestly, it was out of the blue. It's not like we didn't talk, but we did talk. But he calls me out of the blue during the Super Bowl and says, "Hey, Ed, we're having a preseason team luncheon. I was involved in NASCAR, or we were involved in NASCAR, still are. And I'm having this guy named David Clark, fly up to Charlotte and speak to the team. You know, you're involved with the race team as well. You haven't been to the shop in a few years. I'd like to fly you up and meet Dave, and just, see the team again." And I was really scared. I wasn't scared of meeting Dave, seeing my brother, seeing the team, but I was scared of everybody seeing me and to what my physical appearance had turned into. I was ashamed of myself.
Right.
So kind of hesitantly, I said, "Okay, yes, I will do it." And so I did. I flew up on that Tuesday, and that night at the hotel, I met David and his girlfriend, Courtney Heppner, for the first time. Just had a brief conversation while checking in, and then we went to the race shop Wednesday morning, and that is really when my life changed. And funny enough, it wasn't really through David. It was through Courtney. While we were at the luncheon, Dave was the keynote speaker, of course. And so during that time, me and Courtney just began talking. She asked me just about the race team and about my health, and I just felt really comfortable with her and just completely opened up to her like I hadn't opened up to anybody besides my wife, and just told her about my journey, what I had been through, and what I was looking forward to in the future. You know, how am I going to change? What am I going to do? And so that day, February 5th, rather, was David's birthday. And so we each flew home that night, he and Courtney back to Colorado, me back here to Florida, and my brother back to Indiana. And so my brother had texted me David's phone number because I had taken a picture with David at the race shop. It's actually on my profile picture on Facebook and Instagram. And when I took that picture, I told David, I said, "Dave, I will never be this large again." And he looked at me and he said, "Ed, I believe you. I totally believe you."
Nice.
And I mean, just those simple words from somebody I didn't know who he was. My brother had given me his book Out There back in September of 2016.
Right.
And I read a few pages off and on. So don't get me wrong. I knew who he was, but I didn't really know who he was. I knew he was, the guy that was the obese drinker that changed his life.
Yeah.
That's great. But I didn't know who he is, who he was. And so, but him telling me that just somehow just flipped that switch for me. And so that night, my brother texted me his phone number, and I texted him and, just said, "Hey, I hope you had a happy birthday. It was great meeting you. And, I just want to tell you again that, I'll never be this big." And he reiterated, "Ed, just like I told you, I believe you. And if I can help you in any way, let me know." So anyways, later on that week, I'm talking with my brother and he says, "Hey, Ed, David actually has this group that's going to Leadville in June called the Leadville 10. Would you be interested in joining it? I know you're starting out. I know you don't, really know your path, but, I'll pay his fees for his coaching, if you'll dedicate yourself to it." And I'm like, man, I'm in. I've needed this change. I mean, it's like Dave always said, the universe is conspiring to help you.
And he arrived just at the right time.
At that moment,
yeah.
I was completely ready to turn my life over and just reinvent myself. And so, my brother said, "Okay, I'll give Dave a call. I'll take care of it." And so he ended up linking us up again on a conference call. And, we just took off from there. So David got me signed up with Training Peaks. And my first workout was on February 20th of 2019. And he had me doing 30 minutes, run as fast as I can for 1 minute, walk for 1 minute. So, okay. Of course, when I saw that, I'm like,
"That's scary,
crazy,
right?
I can barely walk for a minute. I'm supposed to sprint for a minute. Who is this lady?
Right.
And so I still have a picture from that day. I post it every so often, but so I did. I mean, obviously I couldn't complete, well, I completed the workout, but I couldn't, you know, sprint the entire minute, but
right.
I did what I could, let's say, and I sprinted what I could, walked when I could. And so the next day was to do 30 minutes on a treadmill at 10% incline,
right,
later to be known
walking
as
or
the
running.
Leadville Power Hike.
Right, right. Okay, yeah.
And so, you know, keeping in mind, even though I was, you know, an athlete in college and I had never been on a treadmill, and this guy wants me to get on a treadmill for 30 minutes, let alone
and cranked up
incline.
Right.
Like, this is just stupid. You know, so I was really doubting myself, but I did it, you know, in the directions where, you know, if you can't stay at 10%, or I'm sorry, if you have to take a break, you know, slow the treadmill down, but keep it at 10%. And so I did it. You know, there was times where I was down to like half a mile an hour, barely moving,
right,
but I kept going.
Yeah.
That was really the key in my journey. And I think to everybody is just keep going.
One foot in front of the other.
Exactly.
Yep.
And so it just snowballed from there. And, you know, like I say, I never missed that workout. Occasionally I had to modify workouts. You know, occasionally I had to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning or do them at 10 o'clock at night or whatever it may be. But I got them done. And so, you know, Leadville came along and it just really flipped that switch for me, I guess. All of the training just totally made sense at that point.
Right.
You know, I hadn't been terribly active in the Leadville 10 Facebook group to that point. I was not quite a fly on the wall, but I wasn't very active either.
A little self-conscious, right?
I absolutely was.
Yeah.
I had started documenting my journey the first week of April. At that point, though, I had dropped down to about 360, I think, 350 maybe.
All right.
So I had a good start. You know, I was 50 pounds down there in 2 months, I think, roughly. And so I was feeling good, you know, even though I was still 350-ish. When you drop 50 pounds, you feel good. You know, that
right.
When you look in the mirror, you're proud of yourself for the work you've done. And so I started documenting my journey on Facebook, you know, and that's where I began to take selfies. You know, if anybody follows me, you know that I take selfies. And that is simply because I'm proud of myself. You know, before I was too ashamed to take a selfie. I didn't particularly care to be in pictures. I didn't really like who I was. And I also documented to show the progress of, you know, of what a person's face and body looks like going through a change.
Right.
You know, too many people, including myself, you know, put these changes off. You're sitting there and, well, you know, heck, I've already had junk food today or whatever. I'm already way overweight. What's another week? What's another day? What's another month?
Oh, yeah.
No, it's not going to change, whatever. I'll just start then. Well, that's just an excuse. And so that's why I started was, look, you know, here I am today on April 7th. You know, so as I've gone through these progressions, here I am, say, a month later on May 7th. I mean, that change, you know, another 20 pounds down, another 15 pounds, you can see it.
Right.
And so, you know, so that was another huge reason why I started posting selfies and my workouts included. You know, you go back to my original workouts and I've reshared them this year as more people as I became more friends with more people. And I've gotten, you know, more comments like, oh, my gosh, wow, you know, what a change. And I first ran a quarter mile and it was like 6 minutes.
Right. Well, 24-minute mile, right. Yeah.
You know, but I was so proud of myself. You know, I came home. I called my brother. You know, I texted everybody. Like, I ran a quarter mile nonstop. I was on top of the world. And then the next day, that quarter mile turned into a half a mile.
Right.
And then a few days later, that half a mile turned into my first mile at I don't remember. It was under 20 minutes. It was around 18 and a half or 19 minutes. And that was one of the proudest days of my life, was running a 19-minute mile nonstop.
All right.
For real.
It is good. And, yeah. When coming from where you were, absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah,
you're rightfully proud of all that.
I am. And at that point, my brother had been on me to order, what do they call it? The ID for your watch.
Oh, the road ID or?
Road ID.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Road IDs. He's like, Ed, you're out running and, heaven forbid if you have a heart attack or something happens or whatever, somebody needs to know how to get a hold of, me or your wife or whatever. So I ordered the road ID. And, at the bottom of it, it has, a favorite slogan, a favorite team, whatever you want to put. And so I'm thinking about it and I'm just processing my journey. And I think, just start.
Right.
And that's on my road ID. And that has just been my slogan ever since. And, I put it in a lot of my posts. And, the more you dissect it, it is so simple. There's no magic formula. There's no wishing or anything else you have to do. It's just start. And you just can't break it down any more than that. Take that first step out of the door.
It's why I for years, I never liked the idea of New Year's resolutions. I never really knew why. Yeah. But to me, if you're going to make a change, start now. Absolutely. There's no reason to wait till January 1st for any of this. Thinking as you're talking there, I think the way our country is right now, it seems like everybody has probably been on some sort of diet where they said, hey, I got to lose 20 or 30 pounds. I think when people hear about losing 50 pounds, 70 pounds, 100 pounds, it is almost incomprehensible to people because they know how hard it was for them to lose 20 or 30 pounds using some sort of fad diet or something that didn't last. As we know, most people yo-yo. They start off with a diet to lose 20 or 30 pounds and then go and put it back on. And so just the whole concept of being able to lose that amount of weight and keep it off is really a Mount Everest to a lot of people.
Yeah, it sure is. And to that point, when I began, and credit to Dave, he was a vegan, plant-based, everything else. And, credit to Dave because obviously he believed in it, but he never forced it on anybody.
Right.
He was that lighthouse for people. He planted those seeds in me, obviously. And, when we began in February, he didn't say, okay, Ed, stop eating meat, stop eating cheese, stop doing this. I only want you to eat this or that. I told him what my eating habits were. And funny enough, I actually asked him if I could keep eating chicken wings.
Right.
I swear to God, man.
It's one of the four basic food groups, right?
Yeah. Well, so actually 15 years ago in 2004, I lost 100 pounds eating chicken wings. I kid you not. And so in my jaded mind,
there's a book you could be writing here you're missing out on.
I know. Yeah.
They could sell it in every Buffalo Wild Wings in the country.
Yes. Well, and I kept every wing receipt. I kid you not, man. I have a scrapbook of wing receipts from Buffalo Wild Wings.
Why?
When I lost 100 pounds.
Oh, when you lost? Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, pretty wild. So when I asked Dave that, I was half serious. And he gave his, his laugh that only Dave had. And, he's like, yeah, Ed, I'd rather you not. But, so let's do this instead.
Right. Could I just ask you, how many receipts did you save?
Oh, it's probably a 2-inch thick photo album. I mean, there's a couple hundred probably every Buffalo Wild Wings that we went to in the country. So yeah, I mean they're from 48 states, I think.
Which states did you miss? What the hell? You didn't get all 50? I mean, people run marathons in 50 states.
Back then, they weren't in all the states. At the time, there was only two in California, and we drove 3 hours through Los Angeles traffic to go to one.
No way. That's dedication. Oh, man, those guys owe you something. Yeah. And if nothing else, they should have awarded you a franchise in one of those two states that you didn't get to.
We and anybody from California will know this, but we were staying in Santa Monica, and the nearest one was in Rancho Cucamonga. And this was in 2007 at this point, but we drove from Santa Monica at 2 p.m. in the afternoon to Rancho Cucamonga and made it in 3 hours.
Is that good? I don't know.
Yeah, it really is, because they told me it'd be closer to 5 or 6.
Oh, okay. And it wasn't because they told you they were going to be closing down at 6 o'clock. You had to be, there. Okay.
but I digress. So, so when I asked Dave, he said, no, but let's try this. He said, what I want you to do is, I want you to cut out processed foods and, eat no processed, no fried foods, eat as many veggies as you can.
Sure.
So obviously that means, I can still eat meat. Had to cut out, of course, processed cheese and so forth. But, when you're, it's scary to think about it first, but when you really dig in, and again, props to my wife because she's the one that did the work.
Right.
There's a lot of healthy food items that you can eat. And, so I saw that progress moving forward, with Dave's open-mindedness. He didn't say, hey, you can't eat meat, you can't do this or that. He just said, let's not eat the processed foods, eat as many fruits and veggies. Easy enough, and that's what I did, and that was how I lost my first 100 pounds. And so that's why I believed in him when he had texted me to just, try going plant-based for a couple weeks.
Right.
And he was, he didn't say, hey, I want you to do this, you have to do this. He said, just give it a try. And I did.
Yeah, that's the basic premise in his book, Eat Shit and Die. I mean, obviously he didn't tell you to unfuck your fridge or anything like that, but that's what he says is give it a try. And
right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. And we cleaned out our fridge, of course. And man, it's been just an incredible journey. David has led me to just an entirely new circle of friends as well. I mean, my brother included, it when Dave through the running community, but then Dave through the MMA community. As I think everybody knows, Dave and Pat Miletich were really best of friends.
Sure.
And so in the third week of May last year, I was sponsoring a MMA fighter named Kyron Bowen, and he was fighting in, it's called the LFA, Legacy Fighting Alliance, a fighting organization. And Pat Miletich is the color commentator for that organization, and they were fighting in Branson, Missouri. And so I have family. My in-laws and family are just outside of Branson in Springfield, Missouri.
Okay.
And so I figured, well, heck, it's only a couple of weeks before Leadville. We're just going to go ahead and make a 3-week trip out of this. And so I called Dave and said, hey, I'm sponsoring Kyron. Know you're best friends with Pat. I'd love to have a few days with you as well, just to, kind of tighten up my training and mental game a little bit. Any chance you'd be willing to fly into Branson? We can have the fights that week. We just get to hang out, really get to know each other. And so long story short, he ended up flying in that Wednesday. My wife and I drove in on Thursday, and we spent the weekend together. He introduced me to Pat. As well as a guy named Rick Koenig, who owns a gym in Branson. I've worked out with him a few times. And, that just really opened up an entire new, circle of life for me.
Excellent.
And through that, through meeting Pat and sponsoring Kyron, I've got to, become just really great friends with another group of family with Rick Koenig and, Kyron Bowen, Daniel Carey, Brian Foster, who's a former UFC fighter and recently got a call back into the UFC waiting on a fight. And, just that whole circle of guys and women out there. And so I'm just really blessed. And that's all, quite frankly, because of David.
Yeah.
He brought that. He right. has just really had a profound impact on my life.
Yeah. And you know what? You enriched his as well. I know it's hard sometimes to look at it two ways. I mean, you look at how he enriched the lives of a lot of those MMA guys and vice versa. I mean, it's a great circle. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Yeah. No, that's a good bunch over there too. I want to go back for a second here. You were talking about when you got started and then you ran Leadville in summer of 2019. That was how many months maybe?
Less than 4 months of training. I went from 400 pounds to running Leadville at approximately 305. And after taking approximately 300 pictures during the race, I finished in a little under 5 hours. I think it was 4 hours and 53 minutes.
And which race did you do there?
I did the half, the heavy half.
Okay, great. Which for those of you who don't know, it's, I believe, 15 and a half miles. It goes up and down Mosquito Pass. Although that year they changed the route because of the snow.
Right.
That's right. Yeah, because I was running the race that day as well. But it's still, it's about 15 and a half miles up to, gosh, I don't know what the elevation was there. And Mosquito's over 13. I think we got somewhere over 12.
Yeah. I think we maxed out at like 12.8.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, some people say that the new course that we ran was harder than just going straight up and down, because the new course was up, down, you know, there were extended versions of hiking. And of course, I don't have anything to go from. I'm just going from what people have told me.
Right.
Some people say it was harder. Some people say it was easier. So.
Personally, I thought it was easier, but just because it suited my strengths better. I'm great at just bombing down a hill when I can. If it gets too technical, that's an area that, like, David was a lot better than I was at. But and that's where the old course at Mosquito, where you're really doing a lot more, plodding your way through scree and really narrow trail in places, that part didn't suit me as well. I thought this course was actually better for my strengths anyway. But the whole way down that hill, I saw all you guys coming up with your Leadville 10 Warrior shirts. I didn't know you guys then, but man, I had a great time cheering you guys on, because I knew that, you know, that was David's group and the work you've been doing with you guys, and the determination on everybody's faces. I'm sure I passed you. I know I passed a lot of the other members. I remember seeing Rick out there and just everybody. It was great seeing everybody, you know, getting their way up there and of course back down.
Yeah, it was just really moving. For me, I actually wore a Superman t-shirt underneath a white long sleeve shirt.
Right.
I wore it in honor of Dave, to be honest. I mean, to that point, it changed my life, and I wore that for him. Of course, I brought my Leadville 10 jersey, but, you know, just for, you know, and I think most that are going to listen to this know his story, but, you know, when he finished his first 5K and, you know, in his, you know, his son asked or said, you know, "Daddy, you're Superman." And he said, you know, "No, son, we're all Superman," you know.
Right.
You know, and that's how it became to be. You know, he just gave us that inspiration of, you know, we're the Leadville 10, but, you know, we're all Superman. We can do this if we put our hearts and mind to it. And that's what the Leadville 10 was all about. And a misconception about the Leadville 10 is it's not 10 people.
No.
Most people think that. Even today, I'll meet people that say, "Oh, it's the group of 10, right?" I said, "Well, no, actually, it was, you know, the total group was around 37 of us. I think there was 18 or 20 that made it to Leadville." But no, it's the Leadville 10 is based on Gandhi's 10 principles to make the world a better place.
Exactly.
And that's what was on the back of our T-shirts, were those 10 principles. And, but with that said, that's why, you know, then and every race since, except for my first, organized ultra race, I've worn my Superman shirt, and I'll continue to do that because it just puts the confidence in me,
right?
You know, to know that, you know, we're Superman, we can do this. And, you know, I just feel it in the shirt, you know, just, it makes me feel that way.
Yeah, it's your game day routine out there, basically.
It honestly really is.
Yeah.
And it's mental for me as well.
Oh, yeah. No, everybody's got them. Athletes are full of these those kind of superstitions. I mean, for a long time for me, it was always wearing blue shorts. I've outgrown that one. But, you know, whatever it is, you know, I see football players who put, you know, certain kinds of eye black on their face, for instance. You know, just it could be a foggy, cloudy day, like that Army-Navy game, and they're wearing eye black. But, you know, whatever gets you into the game that day.
Yeah.
Now, I noticed you wore that Superman shirt an awful lot during David's bike ride this past January, where he did his Hockey Fights Cancer fundraiser bike ride through six NHL cities from Chicago to New York in the middle of freaking January. So, So tell me a little bit more about that ride. And, you know, obviously you and Otis were his main crew there, stuck with him there for, what was it, about 3 weeks, I think it took you guys, right?
It was, and my memory escapes me. I think he did it in like 21 days, and then we had 2 days off in New York City. But so, yeah, so he and Otis actually started on their own in Chicago, and then I joined up with them 2 days later, just outside of Detroit, Michigan, on the second stop. So I missed the first stop in Chicago.
Okay.
And so I joined them there on the third day in Michigan, and man, those guys, that trip taught me so much about life, about myself, just about overcoming obstacles, your mind, everything. One of the first things for me, and for most people that know me, know that I'm really pretty organized. When I go out for a run, I have to have, my hourly 200 calories in my pocket. I just don't wing it. I know for sure when I'm going to stop and, refill water or anything like that. I know exactly what I'm going to do. When those guys picked me up, they had rented a white van, and I had a suitcase, and that was it. So I'm thinking, well, I know they're in a van, David, I'm sure has a couple of bikes, his backup, but there's going to be plenty of room. They've slept in the van for a night, I think, already. I'm going to have room.
Right.
So they get out of the van and like, Ed, I hope we have room. And I'm like, yeah, funny, haha. And they open the back of this van up, and it's like the van threw up. I mean, there is stuff everywhere. And immediately I'm like, oh, my God. I seriously hope there is room. I'm just going to have to lay across all this stuff. Right. So they somehow managed to organize it a little bit. And so Dave offers, he's been riding his bike. He's wore out. And he's like, yeah, don't worry about it. I'll sit back there. I'm like, no, I'm going to sit back here.
Right.
And so that was just literally a corner of the van cleared out. And I've never been this small in my life to just be able to sit in this little corner next to my seat. So we pull into the hotel that night, just outside of Detroit. It's freezing. It's miserable. And unfortunately, Otis had went and bought one of those larger Igloo coolers that doubled as my new seat. And I posted, hundreds of pictures, a handful of videos during the ride. And a couple of them, I documented in it. Said, okay, I'm getting into the back of the limousine. Here's my seat. And I'm sitting on the cooler, and I'll yell up to the guy, up to Dave and Otis. And so what really got me about Dave, though, is just how adaptable that he was.
Yeah.
He always made things work. And nothing ever got on his nerves. Nothing ever got to him. That first day he wanted a peanut butter, or I guess it'd be the second day that I was with him. He had stopped and wanted a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And so I said, okay, Otis, well, where's the sandwiches? And he said, the bread's in the back. I got the peanut butter up here. I'm not sure where the knife is. <I'm> like, what? This guy's freezing his butt off, and y'all don't have, David didn't care. I mean, this just, and I'm not, dissing them or anything. That's just the way the way David was. He just rolled with the punches. Nothing got him flustered. And, that's just his personality. It didn't matter. Hey, yeah. No problem. We're going to pull over. We're going to make it. We're going to take a break. It's no biggie. He asked, hey, okay, where's my green sleeves? Well, there was one green sleeve in a bag and the other in a suitcase. It's just, you went with the flow.
Right.
And so for me, that first 2 days, that was really hard on me. It honestly drove me crazy.
And, well, I'm surprised you didn't just pull a Larabar out of your pocket and hand it to him, right?
Well, I did a couple of times. He never ate them very much.
No, right.
David always loved his GUs or whatever they are, those orange.
The goos, yeah, right.
Yeah, he loved those, man. And we had to stay on him to drink his bottle of Tailwind. And So anyways, at that point, after the second day, I just asked, I was like, man, are you cool if I just take over the food thing? And so from that day forward, I always made sure we had a handful of sandwiches wrapped up, ready to go. I had a Ziploc bag of cut up oranges and grapes. And so we were good after that day. But again, you know, that was simply for me.
I was just going to say the same thing. This is to satisfy your OCD, not for David at all.
Exactly. To satisfy my OCD.
Right.
But, you know, I left the rest of it the way it was, because that worked for Dave. He had kind of a file cabinet of drawers in there in which he had his gels or whatever and this and that.
So, right.
You know, I didn't mess with the man's stuff. You know, he had his own way. To me, it was not my way, but I learned. That's why I say it taught me so much, because I learned how to overcome having things my way, I guess.
And that's a hard lesson. I mean, we're all set in our ways to a certain extent. And it's very hard to be adaptable like that in a lot of cases. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, with the food thing, I thought it was just, you know, imperative, because the guy's out there freezing his butt off and he's sweating. So every minute that he's sitting still, you know, he's shivering to death. So I just thought it was important that we be prepared. That, and right. When I was hungry, I wanted to eat. I didn't want to have to wait to eat either.
Sure.
So yeah. But anyways, it was just the most incredible experience. We stopped in each city. We went Chicago, Detroit,
Pittsburgh,
to
Philly,
Pittsburgh.
Yep.
In Pittsburgh, we stopped, and a guy from the Missing Chins Run Club that I'm a part of, a guy named Casey Dill, he met us, and he brought us two or three big bags of groceries. Man, he was a lifesaver.
Wow.
Because really, by the time we started in the morning, checked into a hotel, grabbed something to eat, it's 8 o'clock-ish. You know, we had to do some laundry occasionally. Otis did Dave's laundry. We had to spray down his bike, you know, with the chain and everything, grease his bike up. So by the time our chores, if you will, were finished, I mean, we're pushing 8, 9 o'clock at night, and going to the grocery store was something that Otis would do at like 4 o'clock in the morning. And so, you know, Casey bringing those groceries just really saved us about 5 days worth of doing that.
Wow. Nice.
And by the way, he brought me something I'd never seen before, was a 20-unit box of Lara bars.
Score.
Dude, when I saw those in the bottom of the grocery bag, I was like, score. Exactly.
Do you want to explain that a little bit?
They're mine.
Right. Those folks that don't know about you and Lara bars, you want to explain that just a little bit?
Oh, my God. I developed an addiction to them during the Great Virtual Race of Tennessee, Great Virtual Race Across Tennessee 1000K this summer. It started in May and went technically through the end of August. I finished at the end of July. And, I would eat anywhere from 3 to 4 of them during the run. And then at night I would have another 3, 4, or even 5 of them. I was putting down anywhere from 6 to 10 a day. It became my addiction, and it was horrible. I finally put them down actually on, it was my brother's birthday, Monday, September 13th. It was 5 days before my stomach hernia surgery. And I was like, man, I've got to stop these. You know, there's only a little bit of added sugar, so they're not terrible, but I also don't need them. And that was as hard as putting down chicken wings, I tell you.
Really?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, yeah, that was for real.
That's insane. You know, I'll often joke about how when things were getting tough this summer, I found myself eating aid station food a lot of the time. Yeah. And I think it's funny, because if I've done an ultra marathon, I've done a race, the last thing I feel like eating after that race is aid station food. I mean, I never touch ramen noodles except in a race. You know, they're just a salt shaker and a cup as far as I'm concerned. So to hear somebody say they actually crave basically what was your aid station food night and day, that just cracks me up.
Yeah, man, it was wild. So I put those down like a boss. I think they lasted about 4 or 5 days on that trip. but they was key.
Right.
Yeah,
so what was the what was the low point on that trip for you guys?
The finish.
That was the low point. Most people be thinking finish line. This is the best part. It was the opposite though, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. For me, it was because that minute was over. From Pittsburgh, Eric Strand, I need to give a big shout out to him because we hadn't been staying in the nicest of hotels to that point. And so Eric Strand really took care of us with a Drury Suites there in Pittsburgh. Beautiful hotel there near downtown Pittsburgh. And that's where we met Casey as well. And so I was able to get a great workout in there. We all had our own rooms, which we hadn't had before. And it just really rejuvenated us.
Yeah.
And so, that was just right in time for us. We were about a week in, and we were just beginning kind of a grueling part of climbing into the mountains, the Allegheny Mountains, beginning the next day. And so that just really recharged the batteries, man. That was pivotal. And so we took off from Pittsburgh to Philadelphia, and Philly, we of course went to the Rocky statue, and Dave carried his bike up the steps. I have no idea how he did that. it's hard to run up those steps by yourself, let alone carrying. The bike wasn't heavy, but nonetheless, you're still carrying a 15 pound bicycle above your head. And not to mention, he had already rode, roughly 800 or so miles in the freezing cold and rain and wind.
Right.
And we were just starting the day, and he had, miles to ride after that. And so, along that ride, we stopped at the Flight 93 Memorial as we were coming into New York. And that was
Shanksville, PA, right?
Yeah. Yep. Sure enough. We spent a little while there, and can't say enough about that. Just very eye-opening. Obviously, it's very near and dear to all of us, but especially Dave. Just something, the memory that the three of us shared there.
Sure.
And so, leaving there, going through the Alleghenies, man, seeing what he did just – put him on an entirely different level. He didn't have a downhill for days. In fact, one of my videos when we were leaving, we were leaving Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Oh yeah.
And in one of my videos, it was windy. We had more hills to climb. It was nice for me and Otis because we were in a nice heated van with a radio.
Right.
So nice for Dave. But so I'm making a video in the back and Dave's in the front, and I think he and Otis were looking at the weather or something. And so he blurts out, he's like, never a effing day goes by. I cannot get an effing break with the wind. Like, hey, Dave. But he's laughing the entire time. He's like, it's just like, it was just meant to be.
Yeah.
But I mean, just watching him, and I can't even say that he struggled. It was just like he embraced the suck is a common phrase. He completely embraced it. And, during this time, I think most know, this trip was, more than about us. It was about, cancer and his father. And of course, the NHL playing a big part of it, because that was what, David and his father had in common. That was one of their hugest bonds was, the New York Rangers. Let's go Rangers. and
hell yeah. Pot fan sucks.
Yeah. and the NHL, went on, and his really good friend, Luke Robitaille, who was a former Ranger and now the GM there of the
LA Kings. Yeah.
Kings. I wanted to say Islanders. Heaven forbid.
Oh,
Islanders.
Fuck no.
They would roll over right now if I said Islanders. The Kings, they really got behind the NHL Fights Cancer, Hockey Fights Cancer. And it was, it was for cancer. It was for everybody fighting. whether it be alcoholism, food addiction, or just life in general. You know, it was to show that we've got your six. I have your six. And, you know, that was the motto. I've got your six. Hockey fights cancer and everything else that it entails. And just watching him fight day in, day out, literally, he did not have one easy minute the entire ride, even going downhill. I mean, I posted a couple of videos of him riding downhill. He reached 40 miles an hour going around these S curves on wet roads in the middle of the Allegheny Mountains.
Right.
I mean, one little slip of that tire and, you know,
disaster.
I don't have to tell you what happened from there.
Right.
And man, he just, you know, he bared down and just embraced it. You know, it was just incredible to watch, man.
Yeah. You know, one of his mottos was always that, I'm paraphrasing, of course, that it's just meant to be in the universe. You know, the universe intended for this to happen. And even when he ruptured his Achilles while sparring in his last training session before he was due to have his first actual fight, he ruptured his Achilles. He said he sat down on the mat and laughed because it was kind of like, well, that's what the universe intended here, you know?
Yeah, and look what it inspired in him. I mean, riding the bike. Otherwise, he would have been boxing somewhere, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And, you know, that whole bike ride, too, it wasn't like the country was following this. It wasn't like Terry Fox running across Canada raising money for cancer and the whole country was behind him. He was doing this basically in relative anonymity. And he's doing, I mean, David's whole reward at the end, you know, tangible reward, you might say, was I think they gave you guys tickets for a Rangers game, right?
Right.
I don't think they were even good seats, but nevertheless.
They were good.
Okay, you know, good.
Everything's good at that point.
Yeah, okay. Well, the Rangers did you better than the Bruins would have, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
But still, that was the tangible reward, so to speak. But obviously, there was a much greater reward involved in what he was out there on the bike to accomplish out there, of course.
Yeah. So let me interject. We had, and this is how bought in and dedicated he was to the ride. You know, he always said, you know, if I just reach one person, then all of this pain and the ride is worth it.
Wow.
And I don't know, I couldn't even tell you where we were. We were at a gas station. I know that. I still have the picture. And I'll make a point to post it after this podcast, you know, on the link or something. But there was a older couple sitting in a pickup truck looking at us. And at that point, we had some like watercolor Sharpies, and we had wrote on the back of the van, you know, hockey fights cancer. I got your six. We are Superman.
Nice.
And so, you know, this man and wife are kind of looking at us with suspicion, to be honest. And so, you know, Dave being Dave, he just goes up and starts talking. You know, he's never met anybody that wasn't a friend of us.
Sure.
And so we're kind of standing there, and, you know, the guy says, you know, I just want you to know that, and Otis may remember, and I don't remember if the guy had just been diagnosed or was in the middle of treatment. But he was in the middle of the fight of his life for colon cancer, lung cancer, a pretty major cancer, life or death. Not that all cancer isn't,
right,
but this particular one was like really severe. And so, you know, they ended up getting out of their truck. We showed them the bike and just hung out for 10 or 15 minutes. And, you know, really it brought all of us to tears. And Dave, you know, he's like, guys, you have no idea what this means to me. This is literally, you know, if I do nothing else during this trip, having that time with you guys meaning the man and wife that we were talking with, having the time with you guys completes this trip for me. That is what this is all about. You know, my father's fighting cancer. This just means so much to me. And, you know, obviously I'm going to be, you know, thinking about you and, you know, and it just went on, man.
Yeah.
And it was just life touching and trip changing. You know, that day, you know, I think the rest of that day and even night at dinner, you know, we talked about the exchange and the interaction, and it just really helped to drive home the point of what that trip was about. And it just meant so much more even, you know, after that day.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. And of course, you know, David was away from his dad at that time. You know, his dad was, you know, gravely ill, passed away, I think, a couple months after that ride.
And no, a couple weeks. A
couple weeks, okay. And so, yeah, David sacrificed that time with his dad, basically.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
And I know he talked with him every evening. And one morning in particular, I didn't post the video, but I took the video, and it was a very heartfelt video, man, of him talking about it. And it was a bad morning for him. And it was probably that day the hardest ride that he had ahead of him. That day he ended up going, I think, climbing 7,500 feet or something, or I forget exactly what it was, but it was his biggest climb to that point, or actually of the trip, and all within like 27 miles. And it was all uphill. It was the entire day uphill.
Because that's what the universe wanted, right?
And it was the most emotional to go with it. And that's also the day where, you know, we pulled over on the side of the road to give him a snack, and he literally just collapsed at the side of the van. And I did post this video where he's kind of laughing, you know, in typical Dave. And I was like, you know, you never stop. Never stop on the mountain. You know, you never stop on the climb.
Right.
And it was just so touching. And, you know, and especially, you know, to my journey that I was on to that point of, you know, just being 11 months into my journey and having really gone as far as I had gone to that point, just really spoke to me in a way that was just so broad. You know, it wasn't about the ride. It wasn't about me. It was about life. You know, you never quit on the mountain. And the mountain, of course, is whatever your mountain, whatever you're struggling with.
Right.
You know, that's what it is. He wasn't talking about, you know, the Allegheny Mountain. That's not what he meant.
No, it's an allegory. Right.
And, gosh, it's just so incredibly inspiring.
Yeah. So a couple of months after David passed away, speaking of mountains, we climbed up Hope Pass outside of Leadville. You and Colleen, your wife, and a lot of other members of our group, and Marshall Ulrich, and several folks, we climbed up. It's about, I'm trying to think how many miles that climb is. I mean, you get up to 12,600 feet.
Yep. I have a picture on my watch, Bill. I will never forget that day for good, bad, or worse.
Right.
It was being that me and my wife took the long way down because we got separated from the group. We didn't make the early turn. We ended up going 10.55 miles because on the way down, we didn't know to make that turn to cut off another mile and a half.
Right. I know exactly where you're talking, right? Dope.
Even though on the way up, I actually have a picture of that sign in the turn. And the reason we kept going that way is because we were lost. And I said, well, no, here's the sign. This is the way we came from. Even though the sign said, what was it? Lewis Gulch or something? What was it?
Yeah, it's some gulch. I forget.
Whatever gulch.
Yes.
Yeah, so whatever gulch, this way, 1.5 miles.
Sure.
Yeah, we're like, no, that's not the way we came because it was like 3 miles. So we took a long route, of course. But we made it. So, yeah, so my wife went.
First hike you guys have ever done, right?
Yeah, everybody's heard of the couch to 5K. My wife went from couch to Hope Pass.
Ouch.
I mean, and that's not putting my wife down because, you know, she's done some treadmill work and, you know, but she doesn't have a training plan. She doesn't work out consistently. You know, she's healthy. You know, obviously, you know, she eats good, you know, in that regard. But you just don't go from walking on a treadmill for 2 miles to hiking up to Hope Pass.
Nope.
But my wife does, apparently, because she did.
Right.
So, we were all there, you know, in July for Dave's celebration. And, you know, in true form to what Dave stood for, you know, my wife included, Joe Fishback, and, you know, a bunch of us, we we overcame our physical limitations.
Right.
You know, even me for that matter. I hadn't done any climbing in months.
Not only that, but you and Colleen and Joe, I mean, all you guys never been on a climb that involved that kind of climbing, you know, rocky elevation.
Not at all.
Yeah. I mean, that's not treadmill climbing there.
No. And we had no idea what we were getting into. Thank goodness the day before, Marianne and Amy Pittman and, I'm probably missing a person or two, but, you know, I said, we ought to get some trekking poles. And of course, Amy and Marianne, you know, it's ironic because we came across the trekking poles because as much as I'm addicted to Lara bars, they're addicted to, honey stinger waffles.
Oh, those are good.
Oh yeah. So Amy had found a store that sold them there in Leadville. And so we were in there, and somehow, maybe Justin Turnbow, I think, said, "Hey, you guys thought about getting some trekking poles?" And we're like, "I've seen them. What are they? Do we need them?" So thank God, man, we all ended up buying a set, me and Colleen included. And that's the only way we got up there. That right. was
nah, you would have made it without them, but
amazing
they help.
Height.
Yep.
A couple of weeks before, a guy from our Leadville 10 group, named Michael Constance, had personally made, engraved this just breathtakingly beautiful tribute plaque to David.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I think you said it was gone the last time you went up there, or somebody
said that. Somebody said that, but it was cool, though, that when we went up there, we got to see it, because it was absolutely beautiful. I can't imagine why that got taken down, but what an amazing tribute that was to him.
Yeah, so that was kind of the goal of our group. And I, of course, took selfies with everybody before we started, and I also took a group picture of all of us before we started. I think there was eight of us, Gary Stotler, and
Chad was there.
Yep. That was the first time I met those two guys. And since, Gary came and spent the weekend with my wife and I here a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I know. That's cool.
We bonded really amazing. I mean, just what an amazing guy he is. And Chad Pritchard, same thing. I'm still hoping he makes a visit down here. And we've became friends. And, of course, Marshall Ulrich was there.
Right.
And, my brother had introduced me to him, ironically, at Leadville the year before. In June of 19.
Yeah.
And so, he and his wife Heather were there. And so fortunately Marshall, went with us as well. And so as I like to say with Joe Fishback, we went to dinner the night before and I had told him, you know, that Marshall was going to be coming. And Joe was really new to this, you know, to the group and all as well. And, you know, I was telling him about just Leadville because he hadn't been there. He drove from Wisconsin. And I was telling him about Marshall and some of his feats. And I said, you know, Joe, honestly, he's done so much. You're just going to have to Google the guy.
Right.
You know, I could sit here for hours and tell you, but it's not going to do you justice. Just Google him. But know this, you know, you're a fan of basketball. Let's just say that he's like the Michael Jordan of running, ultra running, mountaineering expeditions, you name it. So that's who you're going to meet tomorrow.
Right.
So funny enough.
No intimidation factor.
Yeah, right. And so funny. And well, at that point, he didn't. He's like, oh, cool. Okay. You know, he didn't know any different at that point. And so Saturday morning, we meet up at the hotel. And man, he runs over to me and he's like, Ed, I Googled him. Holy crap. He was just like, that guy is amazing. And I said, yeah, man, and he's super cool as well. You know, I can't wait to meet him. You know, we're going to be driving out there. And so anyway, so we all met up. And so everybody just had our own individual spiritual journey. A few people, Alicia Shear and Chad, I'm pretty sure that Chad and Devin Daniel probably saved Colleen and I's lives. when we had about a mile and a half left.
Yeah.
We were in water. We had last drank some stream water about 3 miles before, shortly after we left Hope Pass. We were dying of thirst, man. We were so thirsty.
And how clutch was Chad with that water filter, right?
Oh, my God. So, yeah, man. So they came running out. Chad had a couple of bottles of Gatorade in his hands, and Devin was about 5 minutes behind him carrying a cooler. And I mean, we just devoured it. It was unreal. And so...
Yeah, no, I remember getting one of those Gatorades because, I brought plenty of water with me, except, you know, I was kind of figuring, this will probably take us 6 hours maybe at the outside. Yeah. And what was it, 10 hours? So, yeah,
it ended up being close to 11 hours. It
yeah.
was like 45-ish minutes.
Right.
Yeah, it was almost 6 hours up for us. Well, we all met at the top, yeah. So, nonetheless, we were all at the top for, you know, at the six-hour mark because we spent probably – well, even those of us that were last up there spent probably 20 minutes.
It was a gorgeous day. It was just one of the best days I've ever seen on top of Hope. Of course, we left a Leadville 10 Warrior shirt up there by the rock cairn that's at the summit.
Yep. And we played Time for Me to Fly for David.
That's right. Yep.
Yep. Remember? And I went around and kind of not really interviewed, but, you know, said hi to all of our group. You know, hey, Bill, something, Dave, or, you know, whatever, and just made a complete video with the song playing in the background.
That's true. That was pretty awesome. Yep, you were the official videographer up there.
Yeah, sometimes I occasionally take heat for taking too many pictures or videos, but, you know, it's kind of my journey, and, you know, so many times we see in races, you know, people smiling or having fun, but it's always at the end. It's always at the finish line. And that's not what I want people to see. You know, I want somebody that's like me, you know, to see that it's fun during the process, during the journey. You know, it's not all work. I mean, it's work, but you can have fun while doing it.
Right.
And in the beautiful sights. I mean, you know, I take these pictures, one, because I love them. I still have just about every picture in my phone. But, you know, a lot of people have never seen pictures of an actual race, you know, of the Leadville Heavy Half, of, I can't even name them all. I mean, I did 9 half marathons last year of Moab. Gosh, yeah. Holy crap. I mean, I took videos and pictures of Moab that people just don't believe. They're true. And, you know, granted, my times are slower, but at the end of the day, even if I'm not taking a picture, I'm not going to be very fast anyway. And, you know, and if I can enjoy the moment, make it worth it for me, and also to inspire somebody else to be like, wow, that's actually pretty cool. Look over that mountaintop, or you know, look at this guy taking selfies, you know, 10 miles into a race or afterwards, or taking pictures, you know, at an aid station of some guy dressed up like a taco.
Right.
And don't get me wrong. You know, I understand that, you know, people have goals and want to set PRs and all. So don't get me wrong. I understand that. And at some point, maybe I will, maybe I won't be one of those people. But in the meantime, I'm going to enjoy the journey the way I want.
Yeah, no, that's great. You know, I was thinking back, I have a couple pictures on the wall in my hallway here of when they have the professional photographer take pictures of the top of Hope Pass from when I ran the races in 92 and in 94. And in each of them, I look so happy because I just got into the top of Hope Pass and I'm thinking, you know, if they'd had a guy just pop out of the woods and take a photograph of me a mile earlier, that would have been the true essence of the race because at that point I'm cursing Hope Pass. I'm like wishing I would die, you know, whatever, you know. And when I ran Squaw Peak in Utah a few years ago, 50-mile race out there, the only picture they posted of me from the entire race, I mean, they had hundreds of photos they posted of all these participants. The only photo they took of me, I was so pissed off at them, was going up this hill that is like 1,300 feet of climbing in 1 mile at mile 37. It was like at 2 p.m. in the blazing sun. It was 90 degrees. And the one picture they have of me, I'm leaning on my poles. I'm just, you know, it's like I'm literally just doubled over, leaning on my poles, and it's like that's the picture they took. I mean, you know, I was having a good time in a lot of other parts of that race. The only picture they posted was the shittiest picture they could have of me.
You know, it's funny. At the very end, as we're at the Leadville Heavy Half last year, as we're, you know, as you're going down the long hill, where is it, a mile-ish or so, but on the pavement, you're going down by the houses.
Yeah.
There was the last photographer laying in the middle of the road.
Right,
taking
right.
pictures. And so needless to say, I had my phone out taking pictures. And so I yelled out to her and I said, you're taking a picture of me and I'm taking a picture of you. And sure enough, I have that picture of me taking a picture of her, and she, and you know, they post a million pictures, of course, because you can buy them and all. But she has that picture on my profile or whatever of me taking the picture of her.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah,
no, Leadville's a special place, and I know that particular hike we did up Hope Pass, you know, it was a huge impact on all of us. I mean, it was great to bring everybody together. You know, personally, I only got to know you and most of the other Leadville 10 warriors in the last 6 months, and so that was my first time actually seeing all of you guys in person. And, you know, it's really helped develop that bond. And, you know, obviously we're keeping this group going, and we're all aiming towards another race in Kentucky, the Race Between the Lakes, coming up in March. Yeah. So, you know, we're going to continue the legacy there. But, yeah, that hike was really special going up Hope. And I'm glad we got you and Joe and Colleen and everybody else through that hike there, because, like you say, it was like 11 hours. But it was a great day, and it was great we did it.
It was. I mean, that hike really epitomized the essence of who David was and what David stood for was, you know, that the most elite athlete, you know, can do it. But that elite athlete also comes back to help those in need.
Yes.
And then, you know, the ones that need it most, you know, I mean, Joe Fishback's struggle to make it up, I mean, was just. That was one of the most legendary things I have seen to date. I mean, that was at his heaviest weight. He was, I think, 415 or 20 pounds.
Yeah.
And that hike changed his life. He's dropped, I think, 70 or 80 pounds.
Yeah. Last time I heard, and this was actually several weeks ago, I think he said he was 337. So he may be even beyond that now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no. That was about the same time. Yeah. About the same time period. And I mean, that's just literally what David stood for is what we did as a group. We met new friends. I mean, there was people that none of us, you know, had met before. You know, I had never met Dave met Gary or Chad before.
Right.
Met them. They became friends. And vice versa. You know, there was people, you know, that hadn't met us. And, you know, it just brought a group of people together and just embodied everything, you know, that Dave was in that regard.
You bet. Well, that seems like a really good note to probably bring this down to a close here. I know we could talk forever here, probably another hour or two. So maybe I need to have you back here. We'll do another part to this sometime in the future. Good luck with your surgery coming up on your meniscus on December 23rd. And as I've always told you, don't listen to the doctors. They'll give you the wrong timeline for your recovery. I expect you're going to be in the gym, probably in the parking lot, doing your core exercises a day or two after the surgery, right? Christmas morning, you'll be doing core work, right?
If I can do it without causing myself pain, I will. I'm going to tell you, that has been, you know, these last 3 weeks have been really very changing for me. I never particularly did the core work and those important little things that keep you healthy and make you a better runner. I never did them to this extreme before. And having that hernia surgery has allowed me to do this because I couldn't do sit-ups. I couldn't focus on my core. And, you know, with Courtney sending me a video last month of some different exercises to do and implementing some different sit-ups and so forth. I mean, it's just, I've just never felt better at this point.
Yeah, no, and I've always talked, I call them ancillary exercises, the core work, the hip and glute strengthening, even just band work can all work to help those small muscles, the stabilizing muscles. And you were mentioning before that you can even get out of your chair now without help, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy enough. And, you know, it's I'm not skinny by any means. I mean, I still weigh anywhere from 285 to 290 pounds. So, you know, when you see, you know, that I've ran like today, I did 6.2 miles at a 13-15 pace, which is fast for me.
Right.
You know, everybody's fast is relative, but you know, there's people that, you know, I weigh 300 pounds. I can't do that. Or, you know, Joe never said he couldn't do it, but he was 400 pounds and did it.
Right.
You know,
amazing.
These things can be done. We had our Superman Leadville 10 Warrior Group Zoom call on Tuesday. And, you know, Courtney and you, you know, our topic was self-limiting expectations. Don't limit yourself to thinking that you have to be 200 pounds in order to run.
Exactly.
You know, you got to be smart about it. I wasn't extremely smart about starting to run. I created some unnecessary soreness this year in doing it, but you can get out there. You can run for a minute, 2 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever it is. Just start and, don't limit yourself.
Yeah. And we were having the conversation the other day where, you know, when David started, he got on a treadmill and he lasted 15 seconds the first day. And he said he thought it was he was going to be Sanford, Elizabeth, here I come. I'm having the big one. and then the second day, I think he went maybe 30 seconds or whatever it was. And then obviously built up very, very slowly from there. But, you know, it started taking, you know, accelerating, started taking off for him. And, right. You know, it's taking that first step, yeah. I should say.
Well, Bill, I really appreciate your time and – you know, I hope we can do it again. And this has really meant a lot to me. And I'm so honored to have this time with you on Dave's podcast. This means so much to me.
Well, no, thank you for being on. I mean, you're really one of those real great influencers within the Leadville 10 Warriors group. As you mentioned, you do a lot of posting out there and everything, but, you know, I want to make up some shirts for when we go run in Kentucky. And I was actually just thinking, you know, maybe we should put your motto on there, which says, what, do the hard shit?
Occasionally I do refer to that because,
right.
you either make an excuse or you do it. You know, you do it or you make an excuse. Which one are you going to choose, man?
Or, you know, even in life. I mean, you know, it's a lot harder to actually take on a task that you need to get done with your day than maybe getting on your phone and looking at your Instagram feed, right? You know, but sometimes right. You got to just put it down, do the hard shit. You get through it. And, you know, obviously that's moving you forward. And you mentioned Gary Stotler before, and I'll give him a little plug. He's got a new book coming out, which, and a lot of it is about, I wish I remember the title there, but it's about basically action equals success. You know, if you don't move forward, you're not going to see that success. And so everything you need to be on a mission. Your mission has to be getting from point A to point B, as we talked about in our call on Tuesday. Every little thing that you do, if it's not moving you closer towards that eventual goal that you have, then that's not part of your mission. So I appreciate your being part of that, encouraging people in the group, do the hard shit, whatever it is. So thanks so much for being on the podcast today. And like I say, love to keep talking with you here. Where can people find you online, Ed? I know you, since you're out there, where's the best place for them to find you?
On Facebook, I'm just Ed Barnett. And then on Instagram, Ed.Barnett. And I have an E at the end of Barnett, Barnett. Ed.Barnett.
Okay, beautiful. Thanks very much, brother. Really appreciate you being on the show today. Really enjoyed having our conversation. This has been an awful lot of fun. If you enjoy the We Are Superman podcast, please give us a 5-star rating wherever you get your podcasts. The 5-star rating really helps us rise up in their search algorithm. More people can find out about the show. So that 5-star rating would be really appreciated. Everybody out there, please be positive, stay safe, and please wear your mask. And for now, everybody, happy holidays, happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, and Happy New Year. And we look forward to seeing you again on the We Are Superman podcast.